Welcome to the Minimum Viable Podcast, a project of the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum. Our mission is to inspire, connect, and empower people in order to promote a culture of innovation in the U.S. national security community. You can learn more about DEF and get involved at DEF.org. That's DEF.org. We look forward to your ideas and are excited to connect you with other doers working on hard problems.
First off, we said it earlier. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for attending, especially, you know, the speakers, James, Allen, Doug, Justin. I can't thank you enough. None of this is possible without having you guys here. This is just a fun place for us to talk about additive manufacturing here inside defense as a whole. What is going on, and to really increase communication between teams and have some good discussion. So I'm gonna go around the room real quick, just for everybody, and Allen and Justin, I'll leave you for last, but let's go ahead and give your own introductions and say who you are and talk about your brief background with AM in this sector. And let's start off with James.
Yeah, my name is Jim Zanino. I'm with the U.S. Army Development Command at the Armament Center. I started 3D printing in AM in the late 90s. College, then when I started working for the Army. And I'm excited for this forum. And I'm the Army's Advanced Manufacturing Principal for the Futures Command.
Excellent. Thanks, James. Doug.
Hello, everybody. Master Sergeant Douglas McHugh. Work up at Headquarters Marine Corps. I'm the Additive Manufacturing Lead. Got into AM about 4 years ago. I'm actually a machinist by trade, been a machinist for a little over 20 years or so, and AM kind of fell in my lap. The commandant for the Marine Corps came down and said the Marine Corps will do additive manufacturing, and I took it and ran with it, and that ended up with me having a job up at Headquarters Marine Corps. So look forward to the conversation as we continue on.
Excellent. Thanks, Doug. Currently, from both of your perspectives, what do you think are the current barriers that still exist for AM in this sector? And let's go ahead and start off with, in the same order, James.
So I think some of the major barriers, so the materials and technology have come a long way, and they're not as much of a barrier as they were. The major barriers is really having that, the data and the information and the software and the tools to get AM treated just like any other manufacturing process. So the major barriers is building those databases of the material properties, and then knowing what happens when you're building something layer by layer. It's a lot different than casting and machining it. So really understanding what goes into that and then feeding that data back into all the predictive models and making sure the software meets up.
Absolutely. Thanks, Doug.
I'm right there with you. I completely agree with James. Another big barrier is, you know, our digital framework. I think that's across the board. We all have our, you know, our interim repositories. The Marine Corps got, we had Marine Maker there for a while. We just switched over to another one for Windchill. And we're actually working on developing what we're calling the Digital Manufacturing Data Vault. But that is really the base foundation to, you know, enable AM across the services. And we're all still trying to figure that out. I'm sure James, you could, you know, talk to this as well, but the Army, the Navy, I think we all have our own interim solutions right now, but we haven't quite figured out what that end all be all solution is going to be. And that's really the foundation of, you know, the digital enterprise that we're trying to establish with additive manufacturing.
Absolutely. So we'll give this a try. Justin, any weight in?
All right, 10-4. Good. Sorry, we're having technical difficulties here, and I'm trying to work off a cell phone as I'm driving to a dentist appointment.
Well, we appreciate your time.
Hey, so yeah, we've been working and messing in the technology for about the past 5 years now, part of the job in the role, just trying to figure out good ways and methods for qualifying the process and kind of seeing what kind of approvals we need in order to get more parts, you know, approved and installed chip work as we move forward. So it's been kind of an interesting past few years. starting to get a little bit of traction, but you know, definitely still have some work ahead of us as we're moving.
Absolutely. Thanks. And we appreciate you working through. And Janet behind the scenes, thanks for making this all work. Alan, are you with us?
So, nothing really to add to the comments. I think Jim kind of hit it on the nose as one specific, kind of combination of areas that need to get, worked out before we really get this moving forward.
Absolutely. Well, great. Thanks, everyone. Glad we're working through the kinks. So on top of that, we've now, the barriers that exist today are worth mentioning. Next step, what most excites you in the next few years? What are you really looking forward to seeing in this environment pertaining to AM? I think we'll fire this one off at Alan and then James.
So I guess, honestly, one of the advances that I'm looking forward to seeing is really some greater application of it. You know, we've got some capabilities out there. We've demonstrated a number of things, and we've got maybe it's a smoldering or a little bit of a groundswell of excitement about certain capabilities that we have been able to demonstrate, but it's been pretty limited. So advances I want to see is actually us getting the processes and methods and the equipment that we have out there and start getting it moving towards, and this is a focus for many, but moving it towards an app actually operationalizing AM. In essence, kind of taking advantage of some proven capabilities. In terms of other things I'm excited about, it's one of the places that I got first involved with additive was in the metal arena. And I think technology wise, we're starting to add kind of more of that informed insight to the builds with adding things like sensor suites and being able to kind of monitor the process throughout there and get a data feedback loop that allows you to actually kind of understand what you're building as you're building. It's sort of the holy grail where you go from, hey, I've got an intent to build something. I can kind of now plan it out. And as I'm going through the build, I can actually see that match up to whether I'm really accomplishing what I set out to accomplish. And if there's a spot or something, can I deal with that within the way the build's set up and then have that kind of quick post inspection with an informed, hey, I don't need to look through the entire part, but I can just actually look through something focused area. And then if I'm good with that, I can get the part out there instead of what's taking us so long in that arena to just test the crap out of stuff to be able to get it actually implemented.
Great. Thank you, James.
Yeah. So beyond what he was talking about, even more so, I'm really looking for the advances in hardware and software compatibility that will let you actually design for these three-dimensional and truly get away from having to go from three-axis to four-axis to five-axis, basically getting rid of the axis limitations and be able to add stuff normal to the surface and truly come in and start really making stuff three-dimensionally. So being able to integrate the electronics into structures, but not just embedding them or stacking them into stack layers, truly putting things where you want, almost voxel by voxel design and manipulation.
Excellent. Thank you. A lot of us, we're here today to talk about the integration inside the Department of Defense. What key aspects do you think the sailor, the Marine, the actual service member has in AM in the next 5 years or so? And I'll fire this one at Doug and Justin. Doug first.
Was the question on what access do we see them having? Is that what the question was?
What role do you see them playing in AM? For instance, right now we see a lot of where we all talk in the R&D sector. Some stuff goes to the user down at that level. But in the next 5 years, do you see that changing or do you see it staying the same?
For the Marine Corps, at least, I see a lot more participation from the fleet over the next, within 5 years, we'll have deployed our, two programs of record. We're working on pushing out our XFAB, which is a containerized 3D printing capability. It's a 20-foot ISO container that we're pushing out to our intermediate level and our machinist for an expeditionary capability. We're actually pushing out about 21 of those. And then what's really going to drive it And where the Marine Corps is kind of a little bit different than the other services, we're kind of giving 3D printing to everybody. With our TACFAB, which is our other program record, that one begins fielding in FY23, I believe. We're pretty much given a 3D printing kit to every single unit in the Marine Corps. So taking, you know, where we're at right now and where we're going to be here shortly, we're going to have an AM capability, which with every unit, every Marine will have the ability to, you know, 3D print. Are we expecting them to, you know, do engineering level prints? No, we're not. But we're giving them better tools to address the problems of where they're at. And allowing them to be able to, you know, innovate and come up with solutions on the fly where they're at, and keep on moving forward. So I see a lot more input coming from our Marines and from the fleet, especially as we stand up our, you know, our digital manufacturing data vault, and we're working on getting all the process flow set up for that so they can easily communicate with our higher program managers and our engineers, through that. And then, you know, back down as well. So we're working on those process flows to get a more faster turnaround time on their ideas, on the things that they come up with and develop, while also not hindering what they're trying to do or hindering their mission. So
excellent. Thanks, Doug. Justin?
Yeah, so I'm right up there with Doug there. I think as the technology continues to mature, you know what, our game plans don't necessarily toss a printer in every sailor's hand, but I think as, you know, better capabilities start hitting the fleet, whether it's the onboard ships or if it's, you know, at the maintenance depots, or we're, you know, getting more and more access, getting more and more understanding, more training, getting people to better understand the technology, I think we'll start seeing more and more grasping, you know, when you start seeing what the sailors come up with and the ideas, and, you know, it goes from quality of life type stuff to, you know, operational help. Right. So it's kind of eye opening to, kind of take the deck plate innovation and see how they run with it. So I think once they, kind of hit the I believe button and get a better understanding about how it gets used, you know, the opportunities continue budding after that.
Yeah, I'll add a little bit to that, because you brought to mind some other things as far as, you know, I've been incredibly surprised with what Marines come up with, Marines and sailors. And you mentioned one, made me think about one of the big saving thing for on the our barracks Marines and stuff like that is they're printing the knobs for the dryers and the washers, because everybody would steal those things. Never would have thought of that, and never thought that was an actual problem, but you couldn't actually order those things. You had to order the whole new washer, whole new dryer. So they one unit actually printed one for every Marine they had in the barracks. So they all had their own, and they couldn't complain about not being able to do their laundry. And then on the flip side of that, you know, we got, you know, Marines working with sailors and everything else to print a part for an F-35, you know, never would have saw that happen either. So by putting in the hands of so many Marines, we're seeing a lot of ideas and things that I would have never thought of. And, you know, these commanders and everybody that we work with, you know, we would have never came up with these ideas that these Marines are coming up with, Marines and sailors. Because I know there's a lot of the same stories on the Navy side as there are on the Marine Corps side, of the ideas these guys come up with to solve problems where they're at. So yeah, I just see that, you know, advancing even further as we, you know, like you said, the technology continues to mature.
Hey, Mike, if I could add, this is Alan.
Do it.
So Doug hit on a good point. And yeah, so it's one of the things that, you know, I started with saying, like, hey, I want to see, you know, the capability out as much as possible. And so, and you need it to, getting it in the hands of that end user, getting it into the hands of the fleet, you know, those are the people that deal with the problems every day. And so Doug gave a couple of great examples, right? There's the problems every day of quality of life things. And, you know, that'll wreck your day if you can't get your stuff washed or whatever. That's awesome. But there's those things where that person, and we've had a couple of good examples of this where, and he gave the effort of the, or mentioned the marine aircraft part, you know, that's, there was a specific example part there where a piece part of a full component or assembly actually was the failed part, and your only option was to go and buy this full assembly, and it's tens of thousands of dollars. But that person who knows its usage or knows more of the insights of it knows the piece that fails. And so additive can be, and maybe down the road, it's not, and they were able to print that and get an aircraft up that was initially grounded because of this failed item. And it was going to be weeks away or maybe months away before you can get that replacement part. And that's a big challenge for the readiness of our fleet. So if they can do something to address it, and maybe it's a short-term Band-Aid, right? And or maybe it's a chance to kind of go back to the original designer and go, hey, this is a potential failure mode you guys may not have anticipated, and it's a piece that we might need. And they may be able to make it cheaper or better, but in the meantime, you're able to use additive because of the quick turnaround. And you know, it doesn't get turned around just by dropping a printer right there for them to be able to use. You drop a whole lot more along with that printer and processes and capabilities and good dialogue back and forth that was iterated in a super rapid time frame to get a solution out. And that doesn't happen overnight, and it's taken us a while to get to places where we're enabling that. But that's going to continue to grow. So there's a groundswell of getting this capability out. Obviously, the Marines have taken it to the nth degree by putting it almost in everybody's hands, but we're, you know, getting it out to a large degree starts to get not only familiarity with where it fits best, but it gets you into some places where, you know, you find some good spots for it, and then you start to kind of grow from there. So,
yeah, to add to that, just what we were doing 3 or 4 years ago when we're putting stuff out in the field, we now, across the services, we have hundreds and hundreds of examples of success stories, stuff run, and we are capturing a lot of that too. So that information is available. But as Doug said, the ideas that the guys who we put it in their hands have come up with, the stuff the engineers and scientists never would have done. But then linking the engineers and scientists to the soldiers on the front lines, the engineers have come up with stuff that the soldiers never thought were possible as well. And that's really why getting this stuff to their hands and then building that digital thread or library is really how we're going to link all this together. Capturing the lessons learned, sharing best practices, and then getting the ones that are at school or in the training, get them educated on it all the way through so it's intimately part of their culture of using AM as one of the tools to help with sustainment and then tailoring stuff for the mission.
Well, everyone else gave a wave. Justin, you wanted?
Well, Justin started out the whole thing, didn't he?
All right. Well, it broadened. But, you know, an interesting point on that is Doug is super passionate talking about putting it at the Marine Corps level. I've always appreciated there's a huge separation between what's going on with Marines and sailors. And, you know, me being a sailor only a few years ago, I think it's almost the opposite for the Navy today, where the Marines are going full charging. Everyone is aware of what AM does. There's great use cases. The Navy, there's use cases, but I don't think every sailor realizes the assets they have, where, how to get in touch with AM, what makes sense to be AM. So hopefully that's an area where I think, you know, we could learn a little bit. I would love to get the awareness within the naval arena, just like the Marines are doing. So for one time, Doug, I don't think we'll have to argue. Hats off to the Marines. You're doing well.
We've had a great campaign plan. So
yeah, and it's done well. So along those lines, you know, the digital front, it's hard. So what do you guys see being concerns on the digital front? If it's IP, if it's infrastructure, we all know that AM is fundamentally built on this. Why do you think the digital side is a little bit behind, and why is it on all of our minds on something that's important in the path future? I'm going to throw that at, I think, James and Justin.
Repeat that again. What exactly do you want me to answer?
Sorry. I keep jumping the questions in the order, but the digital realm we've all been talking about today, the importance. We talked about barriers earlier. Why do you think we're talking about that, since AM rides on the back of digital? Do you think there's certain barriers that only the DoD has, or do you think it's related to some larger picture, or just the fact of IP and how we handle products today.
Yeah, it's all of that. And one of the major things when we work with industry and academia and trying to share these best practices, the cybersecurity and the OPSEC requirements is so much bigger. And that's where a lot of our senior leaders don't, not that they don't trust the technology yet, but we got to make sure the right people are making the right things for the right reasons. And if we are doing this, we can't let that information get to our adversaries. So while there's a lot of bureaucracy slowing the digital acceptance of the digital thread, and part of it is for OPSEC, and the other big barrier we have is the cost, because we have systems that the DoD has spent billions of dollars, digital systems, part systems, tracking numbers, making sure that industry is linked into that, all the services are linked. And now we're trying to add new kinds of data or information into it that hasn't really been standardized, and they don't really have systems to link these all together. And years ago when I was working with Captain Bridges and we're really trying to get the digital thread out in the field, we realized some of the guys in the Army and on the ships were running Windows 3.0 and couldn't do more than 8 colors, and we're trying to give them this digital data solution where they can spin something in 3 dimensions. So there's hundreds of thousands of servicemen out there, and they don't necessarily have the latest and greatest equipment and the compatibility of just saying we're going to have a digital thread and a digital repository, forgetting how difficult it is for someone to download a file securely halfway around the world with limited bandwidth if they even have a modern computer with them at the time. And then while we're doing that, not taking away what their regular official mission they're supposed to be doing there is. So we want to enable them as much as possible, but we don't want to hinder what the real reason those servicemen are where they are and what they're doing.
Alan, do you have anything to add?
Well, I'm just going to pick on a point that Jim just had mentioned. So think about some of the cyber requirements, and while I don't understand half of that stuff, you know, it's pretty cumbersome and overbearing, but think of, and it's pretty costly. It's, you pointed out, it's costly for us to develop and how we integrate it with some of our systems. But imagine a small company that's got to go out there and meet those cyber requirements, and it becomes almost a non-starter when it gets so expensive for you just to enter the game to meet those requirements. So it's onerous for a reason, and I don't know what you do to get around it. It becomes a hard point when you want to help enable a vast range of small businesses and manufacturers out there to support our needs. We want to have a flexible supplier base out there so that we can get things turned around quickly. It's just some of those areas are going to be barriers, I'm afraid.
Absolutely. Thanks. You know, along those lines, we're talking about barriers and government. What about policy? What's the view you have on policy regarding AM, what needs to be there, what doesn't? I think two very unique perspectives on that are going to be Doug and Justin. And Doug, I think we pretty much have a good idea where you might go with this. Justin, what's your idea in policy and regulation in the AM space for our application?
So it's getting enough requirements and guidance out there that we can make a, you know, political answer, right? Make a repeatable and safe part to go out. But it's about not making it so impractical and so complicated that you can't, you know, maybe your requirements can't outweigh the benefit of the technology, right? So if you end up coming up with policies and requirements, they can't be, you know, 2 years worth of testing is required in order to print the part that we can make in a week, right? So coming up with that fine balance of what's good enough to get us to the end point, which then lets us capitalize on the technology, which is ironic coming from my position since this is all the stuff that I'm supposed to be doing. The other thing is also kind of binning, you know, the quick, easy wins, right? So if the part really doesn't have a lot of criteria to it, you know, you're making a doorknob, you're making door stops, you're making button switches, covers, lights, like that kind of stuff, you know, don't treat it like it's going to be, I don't know, a 900-pound PSI steam valve that's going into a, you know, boiler system somewhere, right? So understanding how to bin the parts and kind of give the reality check of how much you really have to care about the part, right? And know where it lasts, and also come up with a good understanding of, you know, get me home parts. You know, I heard Marine Corps folks always pound about, you know, getting me that last mile, you know, not moving the Iron Mountain to the shore, but, you know, get me one more mile down and I'm one more mile further into the fight. You know, it's kind of keep that mentality in, but that's also going to take you to changing culture. And it's kind of, you make people uneasy when you start talking risk and everything else and inflicting more risk with the looser policy.
Thanks, Justin. Doug?
With our policy, we really wanted to come out with and give our commanders some right and left lateral limits. Compared to all the other services, we've obviously been a lot looser, I guess you would say, with what we allow Marines to do and what we allow, you know, commanders to approve. And kind of from the get-go, we wanted to get this in the hands of as many people as we possibly can, with the barrier entry so low, especially when we're talking about polymers. We realized, you know, that anybody could really get in here with, you know, a minimum amount of training. Give them about a week of training and, you know, they could start really start coming up with their ideas. But we wanted to give those commanders some right and left lateral limits, add some processes in there in order to, you know, be able to accurately be able to track, you know, document, understand, you know, account for all the printers and everything else. So we want to be able to have that, but we also wanted to give the commanders a risk structure to where they could accept, because I think we're the only service that allows a commander to make the decision on whether to put that AM part on a piece of equipment. And we have, you know, similar system to the Navy. We have our binning process where, you know, green, if it has, you know, if it's not going to hurt anybody, if it breaks, if it's not going to do any damage to the PC equipment, by all means, just go ahead and print it, and you print as many of them as you want, you know, and then that risk category goes up. You know, you get into a yellow bin part where there's a slight chance of damage to property or slight chance of damage to a person, then, you know, that would require, you know, a battalion commander's approval. And then you get into the red where there's a good high chance of it. That also requires a battalion commander's approval. He can approve it, but most of the time when you get those red items, it's going to go directly to SysCom before the commander says yes or no. The reason we didn't say that, you know, outright, that for a red bin item that a commander couldn't approve it, because we didn't want to hinder them, kind of like Justin was saying, making that policy so tight that they didn't have any wiggle room for, you know, when they're in a deployed environment, a wartime environment. I didn't want them worrying about, well, it's a red bin item, I can't make it. No, make it if you need it to, you know, limp along and get that next mile. So our policy just kind of gave, you know, some right and left lateral limits. You know, for the Marine Corps, obviously they're a lot wider than the other services. Let me also put this out. We have, you know, ground side and aviation. Our aviation follows directly with Nav Air. So if it goes on a aircraft, you know, we're not that loose with that stuff. We follow Nav Air's policies. But on the ground side, you know, we give a lot more freedom to our commanders and Marines to be able to go out there and truly innovate and solve the problems where they're at.
Absolutely understood. James, you looks like you've been itching.
Yeah. So very similar, since there is no plagiarism between the services, the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines, we all took each other's policies and they're very similar. And they were trying to bring those together for the OSD higher level one. But we also have the red, green for battlefield damage and assessment and repair. We've given the commanders the authority to make that field decision. But anything that's long-term consideration or sustainment or outside of that beat our authority they already have, then we have different policies or guidelines, which are a lot stricter than the Marines have. And then also, like the Navy does, separating airworthiness considerations are a lot different than the ground forces. And with the policy side of the Army, one of the things we've hit too is we're just orders of magnitude larger with the number of commanders and the checks that we have to have and disperse. Well, we thought about trying to get everything out there like the Marines. We're using that, but we had to pick which type of Army ground forces got to use the systems first, because we just couldn't wrap our head around trying to give that many people that much authority. And from a private all the way down to a commander and the special force guys, is a vast array of what responsibilities, what they have and what they can be taught and how we fit it into their mission and profile. Like I said, we want to enable and not hinder them too. So, but you're talking a lot of 18 to 22-year-olds that have other things on their mind. You can't leave the brackets too wide because we're going to see a lot of stuff that we really shouldn't and don't want to see. But we also don't want to limit it so much that we don't get their good ideas.
Absolutely. You know, on the Navy side, we've got a little heritage on the aviation community called Zap. Whenever another aircraft from another command flies onto the ship, you zap it with your sticker. AM is going to enable a whole new feature for that. And I can't wait to see what's left behind for other groups. So this is something, you know, we're coming up on time here. We still got a few minutes, but I think this is part where I want to capture every single one of your inputs. What do you know of inside of the DoD as a whole for anybody that could be a resource for somebody to learn more? And if you have exposure to other branches, feel free. Is there a particular website? Is there a group they could call? Someone you can get a hold of if you're curious about AM from an area that you might not know. If this is a sailor, if this is anybody, what resources are you aware of for people to get a hold of AM and learn more? Let's start with Doug.
Great resource would be Captain Matt Audette. He is at our Advanced Manufacturing Operations Cell. He is going to be pretty much the lead dog as I, you know, head out here shortly. But any type of information, we have a 24-hour help desk that you could reach out to for any type of questions with additive manufacturing. And he's, you know, key to pretty much everything we do in the Marine Corps with AM right there along with me. We also have a company that we work with and we're contracting with called Building Momentum. And they are a fabulous company. They're a makerspace. And we've been actually working with them for about the past 3 years. They don't just teach additive manufacturing. They kind of teach a little bit of everything. We run them through what's called an innovation boot camp, where they learn everything from robotics, microcontrollers, Arduinos, Raspberry Pis, 3D printing, laser engraving. We run them through an entire boot camp, is exactly what it is. And you know, at the end of the day, they have, you know, pretty decent knowledge on how to incorporate all of it together. And you know, it's a great start to getting into AM and then getting into advanced manufacturing in general. So,
and shout out to Brad Halsey when you listen to this. Great work. You guys at Building Momentum are killing it. So Justin, are there any additional resources that you're aware of in the sector for people to find out more about AM?
From the NAVC side, you know, when we talk questions, concerns, that type of stuff, I pointed to our website that we set up. We have email address that we set up. It's NAVCR_AM@navy.mil. When we can, if there's information or questions or concerns that folks need to reach out about putting stuff shipboard and that type of question. I echo Doug's response about Building Momentum. We've definitely done some partnerships with them, and that's been a great avenue as well.
Good, thanks. Oh, sorry.
Covers it now.
Okay, James, any from your side?
Yeah, so for especially anyone who has a common access card, a good resource is the MIL suite. So we have the Army AM MIL suite and the AM Community Practice, but that also links to the Air Force and the Navy's MIL suite and the Marines. They have their own site. I can throw a link into the chat. And then from there, you can get to all the other services sites as well. If you don't have a common access card and you're not a member of the U.S. government, we open the Army's Additive Manufacturing Community Practice to industry and academia and any reps. You can contact myself. But if you want to talk to someone on the civilian side, LJ Holmes, he'll take any emails or questions or concerns. So he's a good one to dump all your questions on. But seriously, like the MIL suite, getting in touch with the people on this panel, if you don't have access on the military DoD side, and we can get you tied in. Because one of the main things we're trying to do with the Army's community of practice is really manage those best practices. So take what's out there from industry and academia and see what's applicable for the Army first, and then share that across the DoD. And then take some of the things we're doing in the DoD and bring that back to industry and academia. So that's a very good site. Working with Manufacturing USA, getting APAN accounts, that's public-private partnerships, and working with the manufacturing innovation institutes like America Makes, AFOA, NextFlex, those government partially funded public-private partnerships that really are linking the manufacturing base with all of what the DoD is trying to do in our needs. And it's not just DoD, that's actually for all of government manufacturing and capabilities. Those are the institutes to support us.
Beautiful. Thank you, James. Alan, anything to add? If not, that's okay. We've gone over a ton.
No. So Jim stole my thunder for a couple of things. What I will say, because I, you know, there aren't so many, we have a bunch of websites and some of them can give you certain pieces of information. Some are public facing, some not so much, but you know, one thing to, it's an example of this panel, there isn't a person on this panel that doesn't know each other intimately. And that's because, you know, additives become kind of a good, and starting at least from the DoD wise, but through the, some of the same connections that Jim pointed out, through America Makes and others, it's growing and it kind of stays a tight knit bunch. And so if we're new faces, we shouldn't be soon, because you should be getting recognized with us. One of the things that the DoD has done, and it's, you know, it's our, the progression of the services with their AM, but also getting to a point where we started aligning a lot better. And some of that was through OSD and setting up joint AM steering and working groups. And that's starting to connect things like, and starting to publish out strategies, AM strategies for the DoD. So there'll be elements and things that people can kind of read into to see, you know, where our heading is and where the general state of the DoD is moving. And those are on some of the same kind of websites Jim pointed out, APAN and some of the other places where you can get some access to get some insight into what we're looking at.
Absolutely. Thank you. I think this has been great. That is going to, if anything else, for everybody involved, I think that is a key aspect. Everything we've covered is the way to contact AM, find out more if you don't know anything about it. And if you have ideas to contribute to anything, use those paths. So next, I think this is another round for everybody. What has been your favorite AM story? You know, Doug gave one earlier. Just what is it that you think really highlights the capabilities AM brings, whether it be within your organization or not? And let's go ahead and start with Alan.
Well, maybe I'll pick out an easy one, just because it got a chance to, and a story for this this past year, and that was the way AM was able, at least from the services, to be able to respond and support COVID efforts and providing PPE for folks. You know, we all wanted to, it raised its hands early, like, hey, can we print some stuff? Can we print masks? What can we do to get out there? And so that's one thing, to have the interest, but you, it kind of flexed to show that we had some good processes and we had a good connected community to be able to actually respond as fast as we did. And part of that was working through different processes. You know, this, these items had a, when you start dealing with the FDA and so forth, it's got a lot of unique things that we've never had to think about or cross with additives. So now you had a chance to kind of use some of our processes, things that we built for tech data packages that allow you to actually get the right kind of information and the right kind of processes. So if somebody's putting this stuff together, you got to make sure that things were clean and all that. So we were able to do that in a rapid fashion. And it was built off of some of the lessons learned that we had for building things for critical items anyways. You know, each one of the services has been working towards some of that. So we had some good foundation and things that allowed us to move quickly through there. And there's a lot of learning that we got out of it as well, you know, ways that we can actually license something off of somebody to, that had a design out there, you know, it started to open up some unique things. So that was a pretty big positive push for us. I mean, I can't speak for how many the full DoD did, but there was hundreds of thousands from the Navy of PPE that was able to spread, not just within the commands, but also local communities, providing it for first responders. So that was, to me, that was one of the big highlights for at least last year.
Beautiful. Thank you. Doug, how about you?
Oop, I had to find my mute button. favorite fun story? Okay. Here's one. We had The Marine Corps is currently, or was currently, looking for a field phone, for an analog field phone, because, you know, obviously we get into a, you know, where they start hacking our satellites and everything else, and cell towers aren't working. How are we going to talk? We've gotten rid of all our analog phones, all those old field phones that we used to have. We've gotten rid of them. So we're in a hunt trying to find, you know, get those field phones back for one, and then getting into contracts to get more field phones. Well, the commandant came down to myself and Captain Maudette, and he's like, hey, you guys are in the AM space. You guys are doing a lot with advanced manufacturing. What can you guys come up with? So we took that and ran with it and ended up building a field phone. We, you know, 3D printed the case and then worked with the electronics and a little bit of soldering stuff, all the stuff that you can learn to building momentum, and worked with that team. And within about a week and a half, we developed, well, about four or five prototypes, and we were able to take that back and, you know, present it to the commandant, and he was absolutely thrilled with it, which turned into a gigantic tour of all the three stars in the Pentagon, it seemed like, in the Marine Corps, going through, you know, showing off this field phone. What was kind of funny about it is when we got to the program office, all the generals absolutely loved it. They thought it was the greatest thing in the world. When we got to the program office, they were actually in contract, you know, in conversations with another communication company on, you know, building out this analog phone. And, you know, they were frustrated with us because we came up with this idea and everything else. And like, why don't you take the money that you spent on that and put it towards this contract? And, you know, we turned around and said, okay, here's $100. What do you want to do with it? That's what we spent on this. So it was a great conversation. So it actually completely turned, you know, flipped the script, and they're like, wait, hold on. How much did you say you spent on this? And they're like, we spent $100 to come up with about four different prototypes, and they worked, and it completely blew their mind away. And then we've actually pushed that, created kind of like an instructable, and pushed that out to the Marines, and they're actually testing them out in the field right now. So that was a super fun project, and really neat to see how combining not only, you know, combining additive manufacturing with other advanced technologies, it's all, you know, all caught stuff and what you could do with it. So not completely AM, but it was probably one of the funner projects we've done in the last year. So
great. Thanks. James, how about you?
Probably the best project besides some of the COVID stuff, but Alan already touched upon that, was probably, we got slowed down a little bit because of COVID delays, but we were able to design and print, almost completely print, a chem bio sensor that goes into a 40 mil round that survived gunfire launch. So you can forge, deploy sensors into a cave, a tunnel, or an area where you're not quite sure what's down there. So we're able to print, make that, live fire test it, and now we're finishing up optimizing the system to get it out to a user assessment. It was supposed to go to a user assessment in 20, but because of COVID, that got delayed. But that project brought in small businesses, universities, and we brought a team together to design it, prototype it in under a year, and get it to a surviving live fire test out of the range.
You know, my favorite part of that story was how quick Doug took a note. If anything else today with the communications and bringing people together, it happened live. Obviously, I think that's something that could cross platforms. So, Justin, how about you?
So the favorite stuff that we've ended up doing thus far has been, I mean, we've done a lot of community outreaches for the various sites, just seeing what kind of problems we can find. And it's honestly making the difference of, we have a lot of piece parts that people are, you know, are breaking on our ship systems. And we're able to actually provide a solution to it, to the sailors that have to deal with this day in, day out. So instead of using tweezers and vice grips and, you know, adjustable wrenches to adjust and move and, you know, work their equipment, we're actually able to manufacture something. And, you know, when we had folks do the outreaches, I actually had someone kind of look at me or look at the team and say, thank you for, you know, actually caring, because, you know, some of the issues that we run into are literally, it doesn't bubble up to headquarters. So you're actually making a difference to the warfighters and giving them something that they can fix and make their job easier, which is a, you know, major impact and major benefit of technology. And I'm going to follow up for the background noise.
I'm in the dentist's office with my kids.
No worries. I think we're all feeling what we got to do for COVID now. So your time is well worth it. We'll take all the backroom noise you got. You know, and all that. My favorite story has been one that's before Alan punches me in the gut tomorrow. It is publicly available and you can read it. It was posted by, you know, Naval Aviation News, but we had a jet down in Japan, and within 24 hours, we were able to come up with an AM solution. We worked and got all the right approvals. And as a lot of you know, doing that in the aviation space is almost unheard of. And they made it. It included a lot of electronic components, a build, and it took a special place in my heart because we spent all night. And in the government team, you just don't see that. We stayed late. We ordered pizza. We called people at their home and got approvals for something that I have never seen done before in that speed. So if anyone wants to look it up, it's NAVAIR Continues Solving Emergent Fleet Requirements Using Additive Manufacturing. Google it. Great story. It's written and it captures a lot of the details there. So I think we're going to jump into a few of the QA before we close out. So sorry you guys didn't have time to prep, but let's see what the upvotes are. So I can answer one of the good ones. How often an average would this type of event happen during the year? So this is brand new. I think it adds value. I've talked to everybody here and a lot of other folks. So at this point, I can say that I will try to prevent something like this, whether it's in different spaces or under a different banner. We'll talk about DEF later, but once a month. This month, we've captured a lot of, as we said, common folks that are used to talking. I polled everybody here in an earlier email and asked, what would bring value next month to talk about? And everybody said the warfighter. So next month, we're going to have the same panel, very open for everybody, but it's going to be from the warfighter perspective, the people pushing the button on the AM equipment. And for everybody here, if you have a recommendation, especially the panelists, on somebody you'd like to represent that aspect, you all have my email, let me know. So the answer to that question is monthly for the foreseeable future, unless we have any problems with how this is being handled. So we'll play it by ear, but that's the plan moving forward. This is a good one. Is there a releasable Army and USMC AM approval process that industry can use? And I'll leave that open to anybody.
Of course, order on additive manufacturing, anybody could go online and download that. That's open to the public. I'm not sure how well the Marine Corps process will work for industry because our process is pretty lax. I think, the Navy or the Army's, they have a lot more engineering rigor behind some of their processes. I know the Navy's released a policy on powder bed fusion. So I'll let, and that's right up Justin's alley. So I'll let him talk to that one. If you're available, Justin.
We'll give him 3 more seconds. Okay, James.
Yeah, so we have an Army XOR that's available. We have the initial policies available, and we just went through meetings this week to update the Army's AM guidebook. So that is releasable to U.S. manufacturing companies. They just have to request it. And then the process for how we're doing stuff for qualification certification, it's a work in progress, but Chris DeLima from the Armament Center, DEVCOM, he's leading a cross-Army team to really put that process out there and get it published. And a lot of that is being distributed through JMX, Joint Additive Manufacturing Model Exchange. We're going through Army Raptor, our database system, as well as trying to put it up on the mill suite. So a lot of that information is getting out there as we're developing it. The only reason it's not fully releasable yet is because we have to make sure not everybody gets it, because, again, we have to protect some of our information from our adversaries.
You know, and on that, another great venue is through groups, as you mentioned before, America Makes. So if anybody should have access to that kind of data, that is another great point of contact to find out what you know, what you can't know. Highly recommend contacting America Makes for almost everybody here. If there is something that we've talked about today and you want to learn more, it's a lot better than reaching out to any particular individual feature here today. America Makes is a great point for that. So this is an interesting one. Once again, we'll leave it open for anybody who wants to contribute to it. How do you ensure engineering quality of the manufactured part when everyone is now a designer? How do you have policy limits, and what kind of parts expeditionary units can build for a weapon system? So anyone feel free to take that one apart.
I have a feeling that one's directed at me. I'm trying to find that question so I can make sure I hit all the wickets in that one. Right now we give the Marines about a week of training, and then they have several help desks that they can reach out to get more information on AM. Right now, well, it's not really a small group anymore. We've got quite a large group of people conducting additive manufacturing in the Marine Corps. But we have the risk framework, as I was talking about before, on establishing that risk and, you know, having that battalion commander approve on it. For the Marine Corps, we don't have within the battlefield and everything else. There isn't a whole lot of engineering rigor on our ground side. They still have to, you know, when they create a new part and everything else, they still have to upload it to our repository, and that gets pushed to our SysCom for our program managers to look at, review, and then they'll fully approve it on their end. But that particular section, because that could take quite some time, the Marine on the ground who needs the part now doesn't have to wait on that process. Now, the commander can make a decision on whether to, you know, approve that part to go on a piece of gear or not. If he doesn't feel comfortable with assuming that risk and putting that on that piece of equipment, he can wait for our SysCom and our program managers and engineers for their approval to come back to put it on there. The reason the Marine Corps kind of went this direction with it, which is a little bit different than the other services, with putting a lot of that onus on that commander, is the commander's already, you know, he has the ability to send Marines into battle to possibly die. Why can't I give him the authority to put a part on a vehicle? You know, I think it's a little bit lesser risk there. So that's kind of the view and the mentality, the way the Marines are, you know, looking at 3D printing, and the reason we've given the commanders the ability to make that decision where they're at. I think I answered most of the question.
I think so too. You know, another ad, you're the one who brought it up earlier, but that qualification level, qualification based on risk seems to play a big part in this community, where if you find out what's the worst thing that could happen if this thing breaks, and if the answer is it won't hurt anybody, that qualification process seems to be standard across the services, identifying what's the worst case and putting it into a category and determining at what level it could be manufactured based on risk, I think has been critical. And as I said, Doug, you're the one who brought that up
earlier. Yeah, and that's one of the just that mentality and the culture change of that is something that we've had. We fought a lot of commanders on because we've had commanders like, yeah, I'm not accepting that. I'm going to wait till SysCom, makes that approval of that part before I ever approve it on there. And we always go back to them. It's like, well, what would happen if you didn't put that part on there? What's that piece of gear doing right now? Well, it's not doing anything. It's broke. And if you put that piece of gear on there and it didn't work, what would happen? Well, they'll be broke. It's like, so what do you got to lose? You know? So, you know, changing that mentality and how people look at a problem has really, you know, drastically helped us move AM along and implement it within the Marine Corps.
Thanks. Any last minute? Oh, by the way, guys, I know we're hitting on the hour, I promise. So really wanted to give anybody here an opportunity to say a last word, contribute to the last question. This is time. If anyone has anything here. 5, 4.
Mike, Janet, thanks for setting this up, guys. I think this has worked really well. I think it was a good audience. It's the first time I've kind of done the setup like this. So I think it worked out well for how we do virtual.
Yeah, and Justin, you're the best dressed in the entire group. Look at you with your tie and your suit.
I'm pretty sure that's his prom photo. That's what it looks like.
Agreed. It's the best I've ever seen him. Yeah. Well, guys, for all of our panelists, James, Alan, Doug, Justin, I really can't thank you enough. Like I said, this was put on a whim on Christmas break. Without you guys, this would have meant nothing. And it honestly really means a lot to me. I've missed you all very much during COVID. So thank you for sharing your opinions with me, with us, for everyone here. You know, James, thanks for also putting on the suit and looking good. You set a standard for next time. But I want to encourage everyone here to really continue talking. We're about to close down this open panel. The tables you saw before the event open up are still going to be open. So get into those groups, talk more about everything we've discussed here, weigh some opinions, and really keep talking in between these events. We're going to do another one in a month. I will once again release it just the same way I did, maybe a little better, so that more people know. I'll also be counting on all the panelists and everyone here to please provide feedback. Like, whose line is it anyway? This was all made up and the points don't matter. So if there's things you like, anything you didn't, please tell me so we can make this better for everyone moving forward. Thank you to Janet for really helping me put this thing on and provide a great platform. I look forward to talking to you all soon. And thanks for the great conversations. I would like to direct everyone to a nice forum for us to all talk. You'll see when we go back to the tables in the top right, DEF.org. Defense Entrepreneurs Forum is a great place for us all to talk. As you sign up, it runs you into a Slack channel, and we have a great AM Slack channel in there. And it's all volunteers. There's no organization behind it, but it's a great place to continue on the conversations. And in the months to come, DEF is definitely going to help me organize, structure this a lot better, and help get the message out to people who don't know about AM. I think everyone here today, because of how you know me, is very much drawn to that knowledge base of AM. And I can't wait to educate more people in the defense sector on what we are all doing here, the great things that are going on, spreading the word, and really getting more applications in there, because that's what it's about, getting more parts moving and really increasing the use of additive in our sector. So thank you all so much for joining today. I appreciate your time, and I really look forward to future discussions with everybody. So Janet, I don't know if there's a big end button, but hit it.
Thanks for taking the time to listen. We love ideas and feedback, so feel free to send your thoughts to hello@def.org. For more great content and to stay in the loop about community events and activities, follow us on social media and subscribe to our monthly newsletter. Everyone plays a part in building the innovative national security culture we want to see. To find where you fit, just go to def.org/join. That's def.org/join.